Folks, this is a reading of my recent article on Substack called Conscription. A British Army chief recently announced that conscription could return to Britain. The sentiment was reinforced by various politicians and pundits discussing the prospect of future conflicts with Russia in particular and wider geopolitical strife more generally. I do not think that there are concrete plans to put policies in place that would see a return to Britain being people being drafted into the British military. Rather, the announcement itself is merely another example of the British establishment nudging and gathering data and information on the public's response. The response was, predictably, a bit of a mess. Like its counterpart in America, the British military has adopted policies that are explicitly anti-white. This resulted in many white men giving them a response akin to, "Fuck you, mate." As social media's diversity contingent expressed the opinion that they would not be expected to die in what they mentally processed as a white man's war. Unsurprisingly, the most loathsome and dishonest reactions were to be found on the social media feeds of the woke managerial types, the rank and file progressive thralls who, remember, were the most ardent supporters of the Ukraine after the Russian invasion. These outer party acolytes have for years accused the populist right of being mere pawns of Putler, to the extent that he rigged America's 2016 election and indeed created the entire movement from deploying millions of Russian bots on the internet. It was this bloated class of rainbow flag-loving water carriers that were the most vocal in defending NATO policies in recent years. It adamantly opposed the emerging isolationism on the right. Despite all of this, the narrative frame they adopted after the headlines were crammed with the word conscription was to scoff at patriots and nationalists on the right should be the first and die for the neoliberal technocracy they represent. As ever, the centre-right punditry was available to gleefully step into this rhetorical landmine by patriot-shaming populists who were too cowardly to fight for the nation they proclaimed to love. The reaction of Britain's cultural landscape concerning the prospect of being drafted into the military can be broadly summarised thus. 1. The diversity see no reason to fight for Britain because the emerging geopolitical emergency is one among white men and therefore not their concern. Furthermore, they view the institutions of the land as inherently racist primarily because it has long been the policies of said institutions to make them believe so. It is understandable that they do not wish to fight and die for those institutions. 2. The Britlib spends their lives within or adjacent to the bureaucratic structures that have peddled the ideology of woke that has pretty much nullified any patriotic sentiment within both the diversity and the native population. Yet the Britlib supports all of the fundamentals of the power structure, increasingly including its geopolitical strategies except, interestingly, Israel and Palestine. This gigantic parasitic growth on the nation's life is not, however, comprised of potential fighters but managers. As such, they have conveniently granted themselves an exception and exemption to the possibility of undergoing death by drone in a frozen Ukrainian bog. Instead, they demand their enemies, the gammon, die, and to justify this, they willfully misconstrue their concerns and ideological priors. Eternally playing the role, as 3 here, the role of Wile E. Coyote to the woke roadrunner, Britain's centre-right news outlets, radio talk shows and punditry opted to make a virtue out of their willingness to sign up for any potential draft. The regime-approved right can now single their patriotism via engagement with the regime's understanding of what constitutes existential threats. The extraordinarily unlikely scenario that the Russian army will arrive in Belgium, or for that matter, invade and conquer Germany, Poland, Holland and France, does not prevent them from prancing about with Churchillian airs and graces. The frame allows the woke left to escape their perennial incoherence by offering up a plastic patriotism based on not much in the way of identity that can be deployed as a fighting force. Patriotism is the last refuge of the Tory, and through it they can castigate actual patriots and nationalists for their reluctance to endorse the ceaseless geopolitical strife that is their bread and butter. The problem, of course, is their treachery, and particularly the relish with which they've assisted the wholesale demonization and abandoning of the white working class, the very demographic they need in foreign fields on behalf of their to die in foreign fields on behalf of their friends. Number four, working class whites. Having borne the brunt of outright and genuine racism, policies specifically and overtly crafted to remove them from institutions, white men are unsurprisingly reluctant to die for a regime that detests them. This has, in turn, led to the very recruitment crisis in the UK and the USA that is making policy wonks and war hawks squirm and, in the end, peddle press releases on the potential need for conscription. Let us be clear. British men have died in every corner of the globe on behalf of their rulers over the centuries, often needlessly and for a pittance. However, the idea of home and hearth, place and belonging, and sense of family and kin was never undermined or thrown into doubt. It is precisely this ancient understanding and agreement that has been systematically and sadistically deconstructed as a matter of governmental policy and has directly resulted in men no longer caring. The nonchalant shrug, "Fight for what?" is one which the establishment finds it difficult to answer, and their tools in the centre-right pundit class can only superficially lean into what has alienated the Steves, Dinos and Waynes who compromise the only class the system managers are allowed to piss on with impunity. A poorly designed garden. As I look toward my second year as an amateur garden, I'm confronted with some relatively awkward choices. I do not have the luxury of an expansive space within which I can plant everything I want. I would like to have a variety, spring onions and some garlic and herbs, but I'd also like bulk, cabbages and potatoes, for example. The decisions I make in January are going to ripple across the whole year, and future sunk cost headaches and dilemmas have to be avoided now. I do not wish to sit on a midsummer's evening lamenting that the space inhabited by spring onions would have been better used by to plant leeks and so on. Decisions have consequences. Consider then the decisions taken in recent decades by our rulers. Did they make the best use of what was available to them? Was their management and rational and far-sighted? Do leaders who invite into our homeland foreign rapists and murderers, who they subsequently refuse to either execute, deport, or even punish, deserve the respect of men? Does a country that is treated, conceptualized, and viewed with all the reverence of a stinking, overcrowded Aldi store inspire men to kill and die for it? Geopolitically, we should not even be in the current situation wherein the establishment has to frantically run about ginning up support for wars and military adventurism. Neoliberalism and globalism were supposed to end the bad old days by introducing a complex system of trade agreements and multilateral talking shops, all under the watchful gaze of the world hegemon, America. Nationalism and petty ethnic squabbles could all be chained and lowered into the magma of the consumerist mass man to forge a new, compliant new entity whose identity was entirely self-made and subjective. On the macro level, this new world order would reduce ancient nations to zones of economic activity. On the micro level, the citizenry would be an interchangeable ocean of widgets, some white, some blue, some yellow, some black, but all just widgets. The only problem with such a system is that it had to struggle tirelessly against the gravitational pull of nature and reality. The Leaning Tower of Pisa, counterweights and complex mechanisms were bolted onto it to compensate for its poor design and founding ethos. In order to protect liberal democracy, those in power would deem the will of the people to be a danger to democracy and free speech to be hate speech, and if anyone complained about that too much, they could be memory-holed as fast as an inconvenient report into foreign rape gangs. Lies stacked upon lies, often driven by a hypocritical ethnic animus and large dollops of self-interest, greed, and idiocy, drove the political class ever onward into a hermetically sealed echo chamber of rank bullshit and corruption until they were able to convince themselves that the warped and gaudy insult to civilization they had built was equally capable of the fervor and energy displayed by older, real civilizational forms. And now, at this late stage, they wail, "What do you mean you don't find the man in the dress beautiful, or this materially impoverished economic zone worth dying for?" It would be enjoyable to think that chickens were coming home to roost, but the chickens can't walk anymore because they were stuffed full of steroids to enhance the breast meat for Globocorp's bottom line, and so Western leaders will just stare down at it blankly as it flaps its mutilated and irrelevant wing stumps. White boys don't want to have a giggling Russian girl sitting in an office in Brobkovkova fly grenade-laden drones into their balls as they cower in a bog, and everyone knows why. Our leaders can't admit it, of course, because to do so would reveal them as some of the stupidest people in all of world history to ever hold power. In short, they created a garden that prioritized parsley, knotweed and nettles over potatoes, carrots and beans. There is, of course, a possible out, and while such an explanation warrants its own essay, we can explore one aspect and possibility here in brief. Service guarantees citizenship. I understand the cliche factor of invoking Orwell in 1984, but it can't seriously be denied that what is unfolding geopolitically is a simulacrum of the power block struggle of which Oceania, Globo Homo, is one contingent. Fortunately, any spies or infiltrators entering our Globo Homo zone from East Asia or Eurasia can walk right in because we don't have borders. You could be forgiven for thinking that not having borders in an age of geopolitical tension was terribly bad strategy, but it does facilitate a never-ending flow of so-called fighting-age men from across the world into the West. Will service guarantee citizenship? Would you like to know more? The facile jingoism of the neoliberal right wing leans directly into a frame wherein you're doing your duty by fighting the regime's wars equates to patriotism and an authentic right-wing position, regardless of your ethnic background. A synthesis could be unfolding that neatly wraps up the culture wars and populism into a neo-neocon position ready to rock and roll. Thesis, populism, nationalism, antithesis, woke, global homo, synthesis, service, guarantee, citizenship. It is true, of course, that I love my science fiction analogies, and here I've invoked both Orwell and Heinlein in the same article. I could be over-egging the pudding somewhat, yet as I wrap up this piece, I see the Daily Telegraph has posted an article saying, "It is 2034 and Britain is at war with Russia. After an uneasy peace with Ukraine, Moscow has sent forces into the Baltics, clashing with British troops based there to protect NATO's eastern flank." Former Prime Minister and professional Churchill impersonator Boris Johnson is now leading a new PR campaign to create a citizen army, though as yet, who those citizens are is not clear. Personally, I believe foreign men are coming to Britain because they view it as comically soft, decadent, and resplendent with material comforts. They are most certainly not coming to Britain because of the possibility they could be shipped off to a frozen trench in a future Baltic front. This, then, allows native white boys to enjoy something they have not had for a very long time, a degree of leverage. Would you like to know more?